What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. I'm joining you after Game 2 with two of the best in the business, Chris Fedor, Jimmy Watkins, another playoff atmosphere, another roaring crowd. Guys, this one was a dominant win for the Cavs again. Chris, I want to just get right into it. I want to get first reactions from you and Jimmy to figure out what was going on with Orlando and what was working for the Cavs. Go ahead, Chris. Let's get started.
Guys, I do not think this is hyperbole. The Magic have the worst defense that we have seen in the playoffs in the last 10 years. I mean, this
offense?
This is about pace and space. This is about three-point shooting. And through the first two games, and yes, the Cavs deserve a lot of credit defensively. They have rediscovered their defensive identity. Jared Allen, Evan Mobley doing a great job anchoring the paint. The guards are feisty out on the perimeter at the point of attack. But Orlando they just don't have a lot of pathways to success on the offensive end of the floor. Through two games against the Cavs, they have an offensive rating of 88.5, which in today's NBA... that is vomit-inducing gross.
Chris, I think you meant to say worst offense. You said worst defense.
Oh, did I say defense?
You did. That's why me and Jimmy both had our eyes perked up just for a
second. Sorry about that. Let me rephrase. Through two games, the Orlando Magic have quite possibly the worst offense of the last 10 years in the playoffs. What are they going to do to generate points consistently?
I mean, Evan Mobley is a menace. Jared Allen's a menace. Isaac Okoro is playing well offensively enough, and we know how he is on the defensive end. Jimmy, that's clear cut what it is. The Orlando Magic's offense just stinks, but follow that up somehow.
It's not just that Orlando's offense is terrible, which it is. It's that it's terrible in a way that makes the Cavs defense such a bad matchup for them. Again, Orlando would struggle to score against any playoff team. I was talking with a few guys in the hallway when we were waiting to get let into the locker room tonight. Like, would the Magic beat the Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat? I'm not sure. I think Zoe would just zone him up, and it would look a lot like this. But it's because if they have no shooting, they're still trying to bully ball their way to the rim. Except because they have no shooting, the Cavs can sag off, and you're going to see a bunch of bodies that might either will not let you get to the rim, or you get to the rim, and now you have at least one, maybe two elite rim protectors back there. When Chris was talking about pathways to success for Orlando on offense, the pathways to success is for one of these guys to have, if not multiple, to have outer body experiences as shooters. Like, the pathway to success, like Jonathan Isaac taking 7 threes tonight, that's what they need. But Jonathan Isaac made one of them. If Jonathan Isaac makes 4 or 3 in one of these games, that's a chance. Wendell Carter, the same way. Like, they're toggling between these two guys at the 5. Wendell Carter put up 6 threes tonight, which is, again, these guys need to be taking shots. They just aren't making them. That's the only thing I could see, is either they either have to have someone who cannot shoot start making shots, or they kind of have to abandon their principles a little bit and start putting some offense heavy lineups out there, which is not what Mose is going
to
do.
It was so bizarre to me too, following the game one loss, just the commentary coming from the Magic. And look, when you lose your first playoff game, you're searching for anything. You're grabbing onto some hope, some belief, some level of optimism. But the commentary coming from the Magic was, hey, we were happy with the process offensively. We missed some uncontested shots from the outside. That ignores the reality of many teams around the NBA, including the Cavs, are going to give you those shots from the outside consistently because you can't make them. You have not shown throughout the course of the year that you can consistently make three-pointers. You are the worst three-point shooting team in the entire NBA. That's what the numbers say. So no duh, the Cavs and other teams are going to give you some of these uncontested shots, especially when those uncontested shots are coming from Franz Wagner, who was struggling with his shot in the second half of the season. Paolo Banchero, you want to take threes? Fine. That's better than you putting your head down, getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line. Jonathan Isaac, you want to take threes? Fine. no problem there. It's like Orlando was thinking that they were doing positive things on the offensive end of the floor by generating some of those open looks, when really it was the Cavs executing their game plan to a T, because the guys that were getting those open looks are guys that the Cavs wanted to get those open looks, because they're not going to sacrifice any kind of paint defense. Because what Orlando does best, if they want to talk about process, if they want to talk about doing the right things on offense, what they do best is get inside. What they do best is score around the rim and at the free throw line. But if they're not doing that, because the Cavs are not allowing them to do that, it doesn't mean an open shot for Jonathan Isaac, a non-shooter, is a good shot. That's not in their profile. That's not in their DNA. They are not a shooting team. So this whole thing of, hey, we're just going to keep getting these open looks and we're going to knock them down, I'm sorry, you haven't shown that throughout the course of the year. Why would that change in the playoffs?
More so, it probably would be worse in the playoffs. And as we've seen, it has been. And Chris, what I wanted to talk about a little bit is what Jimmy had touched on with Jonathan Isaac shooting 7 3-pointers and Wendell Carter Jr. shooting those. Sure, those guys are quote-unquote adding that to their game, even though it hasn't been successful. But the idea that they're going to try and take their bigs, Evan Mobley or Jared Allen in that case, out to the perimeter, that would mean that the Orlando Magic would have to use somebody else to go into the paint if that shot isn't working. And yet, through the entire game, they didn't make any adjustments to say that they were going to change their game plan into something that was going to work more proficiently. And Paolo Banchero, in part, was being hounded by Evan Mobley and was having a hard time in that as well. So I think it's hard to say that anything has worked well for the Orlando Magic, or that Jamal Mosley has made changes that needed to be made for them to have a higher rate of success.
Right, but here's the thing, and we went through this whole thing last year with the Cavs and J.B. Bickerstaff in that series against the Knicks, right? Sometimes as a coach, you just don't have the proper chess pieces. This is a playoff game of chess, and sometimes as a coach, all you have is pawns. You don't have bishops, you don't have knights, you don't have queens. What you have on your board, bunch of pawns that move the same way. That's not going to be successful. So it's like, Jamal Mosley has done things. He has made adjustments. It's just he doesn't have good enough pieces for those adjustments to really matter. You know what I'm saying? He went away from Jonathan Isaac and he went to Mo Wagner. And in theory, that made sense because Jared Allen was Wilt Chamberlain on the glass tonight. But even though Mo Wagner is a little bit bigger, more physical, a little mouthier, can probably handle the matchup of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley a little bit better than Jonathan Isaac at this stage of his career and his development, it didn't work. He went away from Cole Anthony and, well, mainly Markelle Fultz in the second half, and he went to Caleb Houston. It didn't work, but he's trying things. It's just, I don't know that he has actual workable solutions on his roster. Sometimes as a coach, you have to take the best of the bad options in front of you and hope that it's going to change some things around. So he has tried to do things, and you got to give him credit for trying different things. Lineups, combinations, benching guys that were a big deal to his regular season success. But just because he is trying to make these adjustments, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to work.
Sure. And I think that goes back to what J.B. Bickerstaff said before today's game about making adjustments from game one to game two. He said, even though Chris argued and was actually correct that he did use the word adjustments, that he doesn't like using that word, but it's more execution. And that's what the Cavs have been able to do so far. Execute their game plan to a T, but they still have room to grow on the offensive end. So I want to switch to the Cavs for a second and think more about what's been going on with them offensively. And pointing to the main issue in today's game was Donovan Mitchell going for 19 points in the first half, scorching, and then cooling down and only scoring 4 points in the second half. But there's a moment in the game that I want to zero in on, which was when Jalen Suggs got injured in the first half. I took notice to how J.B. Bickerstaff attacked, how the Cavs attacked in those scenarios, and were able to get offensive flowing because Suggs wasn't out there. He wasn't hounding the ball handlers. And Donovan Mitchell said, I don't know who you have on me. It's not Suggs. I'm going to take this mismatch. Jimmy, what did you think about how this series of events changed? Because I think they went on a big run during this period as well.
I mean, there's no question. Jalen Suggs is one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and he's certainly the best one that Orlando has. Well, when it comes to defending guards, I think Caris LeVert scored all 8 of his points during that stretch, and the Cavs scored 16 before Suggs went out, 14. 16 in 8 minutes before Suggs went out, 14 in 4 minutes afterwards. No doubt that that's a huge stretch, and it seemed like a really serious injury, and Suggs came back in the second half. So I'm glad he's okay, and I applaud him for toughing through it. But to your point about Donovan, Ethan, I think part of that is I was a little confused after game one why Orlando wasn't showing him more aggressive defensive attention, wasn't blitzing him as much as I thought they would coming into the season. I think at the second half, part of that was Orlando was showing Donovan a little bit more defensive attention. And another part of it was Donovan was missing shots, no doubt. But I think that in the first half, he was getting busy because, again, there's two on the ball, but they're not, at a certain point, they were trapping to get the ball out of his hands. And early on, they were kind of playing a little bit more of a traditional style defense on that pick and roll. So that's part of that too.
Chris, what did you take away from Donovan's performance tonight?
I thought he was fine. He's the guy who's going to have to set the tone for this team early on in the game. He's done that in back-to-back games. He's going to have to do that going into game 3, especially being on the road, hostile environment. I'm curious to see what the environment's going to be like in Orlando. They've obviously been waiting for playoffs for a number of years, but it's not like the Cavs are going to Madison Square Garden, where it was deafening, where the floor was moving beneath your feet, where it can be an intimidating environment. I don't think anybody's gone into the Kia Center and gotten starstruck. You know what I mean? But I am curious what the environment's going to be like. And because it is a road game, I do think Donovan's going to take it on him, and he's going to try and set the tone the way that he did in game 1 and game 2. I thought he was fine. He obviously could have been better. He's going to be hard on himself. He missed some shots. The second half, he didn't do a whole lot, but I felt like in the moment of the game where things were starting to kind of go in the favor of the Magic, and it seemed like they were starting to do some things defensively that were disrupting the Cavs on the offensive end of the floor, and they were putting pressure on the Cavs, you know, Donovan was there to make some pretty timely shots. So I don't know, based on the way that the Magic are probably going to guard moving forward, and based on how good they are as a defensive team to begin with, they were 3rd in the NBA during the regular season. They've shown some pretty good defensive chops throughout the course of this series already. I just don't know that it's going to be the kind of series where Donovan is going to be consistently great, score consistently every single quarter he's out there. He just needs to find a way to make an impact when he's out there. Timely shots, rebounds, setting up his teammates, breaking down the defense and creating opportunities for others, just drawing attention so everybody else can have it a little bit easier on themselves. As long as he's doing those kinds of things at a high level for the Cavs, then I think it's going to be enough in this series against this opponent.
Yeah, and I mean, we talk about the necessity for the players around him to rise to the occasion as well, and especially if Donovan isn't having the night that he would want to be having. And we saw that in the first half, at least, when we saw Isaac Okoro and Caris LeVert come off the bench and put up 16 points in the first half alone. Those two guys tallied more points in the first half of game 2 than the entire bench scored in game 1. So that was a good sign for me to see them come off the bench and do their thing. Would have wanted them to translate that in the second half, but Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Max Strus, and especially Darius Garland picked it up in the second half, which was a big thing. And I want to move to Darius Garland because thinking about his matchup with Jalen Suggs, we talked to him post-game a little bit. He talked about how Jalen Suggs is like a little brother to him. He's been playing with him in the AAUs, went to Africa with them. And that dynamic and him going back and forth like you said, Chris, Orlando has been waiting for playoff games in Orlando, and I want to see how he's going to be able to carry these two pretty decent second half performances in game one and game two, and how he can translate that when he goes on the road. It seemed like he's been able to flip a switch, or he knows what he has to do to get to a different level, and that has been aggressiveness for him, is what he told me. And what I thought was really, really important for Darius was the fact that he said when he was on the bench in the first half because of foul trouble, he was watching what Orlando's defense was doing to Donovan and was taking mental notes and using that when he went out there, because they ran similar sets to what they did against Donovan because he was the main ball handler at the time when they were 1-1 switching out like that. Jimmy, I want to get your thoughts on what you've seen from Darius this season and what you've seen from him in the playoffs and how he's improved, especially in second half play.
I'm torn on how to think about Darius right now because on the one hand, it is very encouraging that he has these bursts, right? Particularly with the off-the-dribble three-point shooting. It's just like I'm caught between like what Darius needs to do in this series and like what the bigger picture is here. That's kind of how I feel about the series as a whole right now. Like, the Cavs are doing a lot of things that are good enough right now, and even like as I strategize what I'm going to write about, like, are worth writing about right now. At the same time, how much does this matter when they play the Celtics, right? Like I just feel like the way we're talking about Darius has evolved. The Darius Garland that we knew and expected coming into this season, obviously a lot has happened since then, but like the Darius Garland, all-star Darius Garland, after game one, he had 14 points and 8 points in the fourth quarter. I don't know that the Cavs would have been talking about him the way they were after that game. I don't know that we would be talking about him. It's the flashes that we want to see, but we want to see him put it all together. Like, same thing with tonight. I understand he was in foul trouble, but like, it just seems like he's kind of floating out there sometimes. It seems like the turnovers are still a major problem at this point in the season. What do you have? Like, was it 1-1 tonight? 4 assists, 4 turnovers, yeah, something like that. Equal. Like,
it's not good enough.
If you look at his numbers, like, there's small gaps, but if you watch him, it seems like there's something bigger happening here.
Chris, it sounds like you want to chime in. Go ahead.
I just think there are two different things that I want to say on this. One, I'm going to repeat what I said last night on the podcast. Coming into the series, I believed this to be true. Through the first two games, I still believe this to be true. This is not a Darius Garland series, okay? Playoffs to me are so much about matchups. Playoffs to me are so much about exploiting weaknesses and just finding a pathway to consistent success in this particular series against this particular opponent. That's what it's about for the Cavs. And it's not about Darius Garland. This is not a Darius series. This is an Evan Mobley, Jared Allen series. And that has shown itself. If Evan Mobley and Jarrett are going to dominate inside, if they're going to protect the paint on defense, if they're going to anchor the paint the way that they have in the first two games, if they're going to dominate the boards, if they're going to render Jonathan Isaac essentially useless to the point where he got benched in the second half, where Jamal Mosley's scrambling to figure out, do I go to Wendell Carter Jr.? Do I go to Mo Wagner? What am I going to do here with some of these lineups? If that's what Jarrett and Evan are going to do on a nightly basis, the Cavs are going to have a really, really good chance of winning every single game that they play in this series. Now, they have to continue it the way that they've played in the first two games. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second part of this is that Darius wasn't good tonight. He wasn't good enough. He is the highest paid player on this roster. He's supposed to be a core member of this team. And if we're being honest about it, going back to last year's playoff series against the Knicks and what we've seen in the first two games against Orlando here, of all of the core players on this roster, the most questions exist with him when it comes to playoff basketball, when it comes to playoff reliability, when it comes to playoff readiness. The starting point guard for a team that has championship aspirations cannot have 4 assists against 4 turnovers. He can't go a first half the way that he did tonight his level of play so far in this series. There have been pockets of really good, and the second half was a big-time turnaround for him, and maybe that can be used as a launch pad going into Game 3. And kudos to him because he hit some timely shots to kind of stop one of the Magic's run, allow the Cavs to create some separation, put a charge into the building. Like, all of those things happened in the second half, and he deserves credit for that. You can't tell the story of this game without talking about what Darius did in that second half. But the way that he has played as a whole in the first two games against Orlando is just not good enough for a player his status. If we're talking about standards and holding specific players to certain standards, he has not been good enough in the first two games. He's got to be better.
To Chris's point, right? Like, shouldn't every series be a Darius Garland series when you're paying him the way you are and you're expecting him to be the co-engine of your offense with Donovan Mitchell?
No, I just think there are more important ways for this team to play in this particular series against the Magic, that like what it is he does best is not as important to their success. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And I think what is most important in this particular series against Orlando are the things that Evan and Jarrett bring to the table.
So let's get to the big guys. So let's talk about them, because I think I completely agree with you, Chris. These two guys are the main center of this team right now, and especially for this series. And you've said it, we've all said it for this entire series, this podcast, that this is what they need to focus on. I mean, they combined for, what, 32-29 in Game 1. In Game 2, they combined for 33 points and 27 rebounds, 20 of them coming from Jared Allen. Like, that is some crazy numbers to start a series. And then you think about what they're doing on the defensive end. I think they combined for 4 blocks and 2 steals or something like that in tonight's game. Like, they have imposed their will not only on the glass, but also on the defensive end. And it's shown itself because Paolo Banchero has turned the ball over on multiple occasions. And we've talked about how that has been a main theme, even back to the regular season. And shutting him down is like shutting off a water valve for the Orlando Magic success. Because if he's not getting going and creating and doing things for them, it's hard for other players to get the same look, especially if the Cavs can focus in on Franz Wagner, who was having some decent success tonight. So, Chris, I want to talk to you about what do you think Jared Allen and Evan Mobley have done specifically really well in this series. I know J.U. Bickerstaff challenged them on the rebounding end, and obviously Jared Allen has taken that to task, but what have you thought has stood out to you the most about those two performances so far this series?
The primary thing to me is that both those guys now understand better what playoff level physicality and playoff level intensity is, and they're playing to that level on a possession to possession basis. And it helps that they're playing against the Orlando front line as opposed to Mitchell Robinson, who is, you know, one of the best offensive rebounders in the history of the NBA by numbers. So they're taking what is a perceived advantage and they're capitalizing on it. And you got to give them a whole bunch of credit. The other thing is Evan Mobley is showing why he was a Defensive Player of the Year candidate last year. Evan Mobley is showing why, if he would have played enough games to actually qualify, he would have been on one of the two all-defensive teams again this year. He is a game wrecker on the defensive end of the floor. For all of the things that we talk about with Evan and all of the frustrations that some fans have with his offensive game, which still isn't at a level where he can dominate at that end of the floor, he is a game wrecker on the defensive end of the floor. Paolo Banchero, according to NBA.com matchup stats, and these can be wonky, how they measure these things, it's different than how the other team is going to measure them or how the Cavs are going to measure them, but this is all I have available to me. NBA.com matchup stats. In 2 games, when guarding Paolo Banchero, Evan Mobley has held Banchero, who is the leading scorer for the Magic, the best player for the Magic, an all-star, 6 points on 2 of 11 from the field. and he has forced Paolo into four turnovers. That is incredible defense. That is the definition of taking away Orlando's best player, just taking him out of the series completely. And it could change going into game three, and then game four, it could be different as well. But it's clear that the Cavs are quite comfortable with the Evan Mobley matchup against Banchero. And that allows Jared Allen to roam the paint. That allows Jared Allen, that keeps the Cavs from sending extra help. It keeps their defense from scrambling around. It's a different kind of strategy that most teams can't use against the Magic, against an offensive force like Paolo. But because the Cavs have a player like Evan, they can play a different kind of defense. And it has worked extremely well. And Evan is the reason for that.
Paolo's having a rough time, man.
He is. Can't even get clean shots off against this defense.
16 made field goals and 15 turnovers, yeah, or something like that through two games. Crazy. Mobley is, to Chris's point, some teams can match Banchero's athletic fluidity. Some teams can match the size. Very few teams can match both. And that's what makes Mobley such a special defensive player. To the point about the rebound, I was struck by this thought today during watching the game. Cavs look like the Knicks.
Yes, they do.
And the Magic look like the Cavs from last year. It's a crazy turn of events in that regard. And I think Mobley and Allen have learned a lesson from last year, but in playoff physicality, who better to deliver that lesson than Mitchell Robinson, aka Jared Allen is the new Mitchell Robinson. But I think part of it is also it helps you that you can hang out down there a little bit more often, right? Like when you're playing the Knicks, particularly when you're playing the Knicks, Brunson gives you like this really difficult cat and mouse game for big men to play because he lives in that little floater range area. And he's so good at it that you have to contest him. And then you have to go down and box out these huge dudes. With Orlando, I mean, like, if anyone's shooting from, I don't know, outside 8 feet, you're kind of cool with it, right? So there are more opportunities. You have a better chance, better starting point, I would say, to get the rebounds. That's not to discredit. I do think they have come a long way in how they're handling the physicality. And they, again, are playing less thick bodies. Like Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein are just different builds than Jonathan Isaac and Wendell Carter Jr. But I think that's a part of it too. The Magic don't stress you in that short area of the court the way the Knicks do.
And the other thing is too, Jimmy, to your point, if you go back to last year, the series against the Knicks, and I hate continuing to use it as a reference point, but it matters still. You know, about 70% of the offensive rebounds that the Knicks got in that series came after a blitz. And that's because Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, whoever it was, they were out there, way out there on the perimeter, trying to make things difficult on Jalen Brunson, trying to get the ball out of his hands. And after that, he would find the outlet, he would find the trigger, and then the Knicks were playing 4-on-3 on the offensive end of the floor with Josh Hart making decisions or with Julius Randle making decisions or whoever it was. And Evan Mobley or Jared Allen, they were scrambling to try and get back into position. I mean, I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast have played basketball. It's very, very difficult to box out when you're behind a guy. It's also very, very difficult to get back in the proper position when you're behind a guy. So when you had Jared Allen and Evan Mobley running back to the paint and they couldn't keep up fast enough and they were already behind the play, then that required Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert, Jetty Osman, Ricky Rubio, whoever else was out there for the Cavs, to try and get those rebounds. And they weren't getting them over Josh Hart. They weren't getting them over Mitchell Robinson. They weren't getting them over Julius Randle or Isaiah Hartenstein. So because the Cavs can play more of an honest defense, because there's just nobody on the Magic that they feel like they have to send an extra defender toward, it makes it easier for the Cavs to have success when it comes to finishing possessions with the rebound. And that includes Max Strus, who has been an animal on the boards. Or in his words, the ball is just falling to him and he's getting lucky.
Yeah, that was the next point that I was going to get to. You kept mentioning all these smaller guards or forwards getting rebounds, or for the Cavs' sake, not getting rebounds. And last year, Max Strus got 9 rebounds again. Maybe 9 is just his lucky number or something. But he got 9 rebounds in game 1, got 9 rebounds in game 2. So now he is already at 18 total rebounds in the series, which is really good for a forward or a shooting guard or whatever position you want to say that Max Strus plays for the Cavs, because it's been almost everything this year. But the next thing that I wanted to touch on was not only the fan reaction and how they impacted the game and how the Cavs are going to have to get used to that in Orlando, but how they responded to Mo Wagner today specifically and in game one, and just how that has impacted them and how they've grown when it comes to the physicality. And Chris, you talked about Evan Mobley and Jared Allen learning from the physicality of last year, but I think it's really interesting how every single player, it seems, has stood up to Mo Wagner, who the Cavs have said that JB has said that they tried to throw him out there as bait to see how the Cavs were going to react, and the Cavs didn't take the bait. And I don't think they took it in game one, and I don't think they took it in game two. And it's shown the toughness that that label that they've had from last year, which me and Chris have both discussed how it was a label that should have only been referred to that Knicks series, potentially, but not the entire season. And I think they've shown toughness and physicality this season, or in this series as well, specifically. But I just want to talk to you guys and feel what your thoughts were about the matchups with Mo and getting him to foul out and how the crowd reacted and things of that nature. So, Jimmy, what were your thoughts on those kind of interactions?
Mo Wagner is like junior-sized Kelly Olynyk. In on the villain scale, they're probably similar in size, but like he's like a junior version of that, and like a junior version of Draymond Green. This Cavs crowd plays favorites or least favorites, I should say, historically. Mo Wagner's cracked that list. It's cool to watch them. It's fun to watch them interact with him. It's fun. I don't know if it was every time he touched the ball tonight, but he gets booed a lot. He gets booed every time he checks in. He gets booed frequently on touches, and I think the loudest pop in the arena tonight was when Mo Wagner fouled out. That stuff's fun. But honestly, I'm more curious about the inverse of this. I think the only prayer that the Magic have left is that their crowd gives them a jolt. You know, young teams are always better at home. The Magic were that this year. It's basically how much better will the Magic shoot at home? And the old adage again, the role players play worse on the road. How many Cavs contributors take a step back because it's a road game? That's the only question I have left, really, about this series.
Isn't there a saying, like, the series doesn't really start until the home team loses?
It's true. Because which means some series never start, you know?
I guess
that is
so.
An old adage. Chris, I don't know how true it is or valid it is, but sure, we can go with that.
Chris, I know you're going to Orlando for the next game on Thursday. First of all, we all know you love Orlando, so we don't have to talk about your trip purposes and playing golf and stuff.
But tea time, baby.
What are you looking forward to see from the Cavs going to Orlando into a different environment, into enemy territory, and what they can show not only themselves but also the NBA, potentially, with how the series could unfold in the next two games?
I don't necessarily know that there's anything that they could show the NBA. I think every series takes on a different life. I think every series requires something different. So the Cavs are in a series, in a matchup, that is incredibly favorable for them. It has been since the very beginning. This was the kind of opponent. Like, if you gave the Cavs an opportunity to pick any of the opponents in the Eastern Conference to play in the first round, you would have had a debate between Orlando and Indiana. The Cavs got one of the two opponents that they needed to see to have playoff success in the first round. And to their credit, for the first two games, they have capitalized on that, and they have exploited the Orlando weaknesses. That's what you have to do. The Cavs have to show that they can play to this standard on the road. It's different on the road in the playoffs. The crowd is not behind you the same kind of way. You feel the pressure a different kind of way. You know, it might be harder defensively when it comes to communication and being on the same page. You might have to have a few slip-ups here or there early on in the game to see if you can then correct them the rest of the way. those are things that I'm going to be looking at. Are the Magic going to make some of these outside shots? The regular season says that they are not a good shooting team, but we have seen teams go on hot stretches at random moments to steal a game or something along those lines. So I'll be watching for that as well. And I do think going into game three, part of the beauty of the makeup of this roster is that Tristan Thompson's been there, done that, right? Marcus Morris Sr., been there, done that. George Niang played a whole bunch of playoff games. So it's not this young, inexperienced team that is wide-eyed going on the road into a hostile environment and doesn't really know what to expect, doesn't know how to handle it. They have been in one of the most raucous playoff environments that I've ever been in my 10 years of covering this team. And I was at Oracle, right, for the NBA Finals. I was at Scotiabank Arena for matchups against the Raptors, and they go hard in Toronto for their team. And Madison Square Garden last year, for that game three, that was one of the craziest playoff environments that I've ever been. I've been in TD Garden in Boston for playoff games, and that environment at MSG was up there with any of them. So the fact that a lot of their younger players have already been in that kind of environment, and the fact that this is a roster that has a whole bunch of playoff experience sprinkled through it, my belief is that the Cavs will be better equipped to handle going on the road. They just have to go out there, they have to execute it, and they have to show it, and they have to, in some ways, prove me right and prove themselves right.
Jimmy, do you have anything to add to that?
I would say you see what Chris is saying in the way that Orlando has not really handled the noise that well. That's a young team. I mean, I guess you could argue that, you know, Joe Ingles is to the Magic what Tristan Thompson is to the Cavs, but there, even then, there's a large gap in playoff life experience there. And it's like, there's no like Donovan Mitchell for the Magic. Like, they're all of their main characters are bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young guys. So, Joe Ingles is seventh, eighth man. There's only so much direction he can give them because, there's only so many minutes he's out there with them, right? I also say, I'm watching a guy like Cole Anthony. I'm thinking of Cole Anthony when I think of, like, role players who play better on the Magic. Cole Anthony's kind of this microwave scorer, kind of sixth man guy. He's a guy that Orlando depends on to generate a lot of offense and create a lot of shots for himself and others. He's been bad on the road these first two games. He's the kind of guy who can swing a game, who can have a drastically different type of performance at home. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about the role players.
Do you know how many field goals Cole Anthony has made in the first two games of this series?
Oh, man. It was zero in game one. How many tonight?
It was zero tonight.
Oh!
He is 0 of 11 from the field. His only points come at the free throw
line. Poor guy.
So circling him, I think that's the right move. Like, that is the kind of guy that can heat it up in a hurry. That is the kind of guy that can feed off the crowd, no doubt.
Okay. I have two final questions for you guys to end the podcast. First one is, do you think that the Magic continue to start Jonathan Isaac?
No. Mm-mm. I think they're going to try and go back to Wendell Carter Jr. I don't think you can start Mo Wagner. I think you need his energy off the bench. I think you need him in some ways to stabilize that bench as much as somebody like Mo Wagner can stabilize that bench. But the Jonathan Isaac thing at the five, I think he's giving up too much girth to Jared Allen. I mean, Jared Allen is Jonathan Isaac's Mitchell Robinson. It's just too easy for Jarrett to overpower and overwhelm physically Jonathan Isaac. He's not a five. that's the other thing. Like, they're playing him at five, but he is not a five. His game, his style, fits better at a different position where there are different matchups for him that he can potentially exploit. But playing him at the five against one of the best centers in the Eastern Conference, it's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to continue to going into game three. I think there is enough evidence that Jamal Mosley has seen that is not a workable thing, and that's the kind of adjustment that he needs to try.
they've already started, right? Like, I think tonight they took Isaac out like 2 minutes earlier in the first quarter. They didn't give him as much run. And I think Isaac played...
He played 6 minutes in the second half.
Right. He played, and in game one, he played like 30 minutes or something. Tonight, I think he played 20. So they've already started pivoting away from that. That's, I don't know how many better options they have,
right?
Honestly, but yeah, they're going to try something else.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Allen has thrown down some ferocious dunks that I don't think we saw a lot of in the regular season, but because he had a better matchup and had a strength advantage that most fives don't usually see because they're going up against other fives. So my last question for this podcast is kind of going off of what Jimmy said in our last time together after game one. Are you changing your prediction for Cavs in six?
Well, here's the thing. Going into this whole series, like, I was debating 5 and 6. So I'm just going to stick with the prediction that I had. If I end up being wrong by a game or two games, then so be it. I think the Cavs still have things to prove when it comes to being a road playoff team. And I think the Cavs still have some things to prove when it comes to being a functional, dynamic offensive team in this series and in the playoffs. So I'm not going to completely dismiss the Magic. I think you have to talk about their weaknesses. I think you have to talk about their flaws. I think you have to point to how bad this matchup is for the Magic against the Cavs. It is Cavs versus New York level bad for the Magic. But I'm not going to completely dismiss them. I'm not ready to do that yet. Because the Cavs haven't shown that they have the greatest offense in the universe in these first two games of the playoffs, that's for sure.
It feels like the Cavs, and to a certain extent, they are dominating this series, right?
Yeah, they haven't trailed for a second.
Both of these games, though, like, there's been this fourth quarter stretch where, like, what's happening here? Is this going to be a game at the end? Like, what's going on? How'd we get here? So that part makes me nervous. The change of venue makes me nervous. What makes me nervous for the Magic is that Caleb Houston didn't play a second until like the fourth quarter tonight. That's, you want to talk about like grasping at straws? That's grasping at straws. It's like Caleb Houston has, you know, a theoretical jump shot. Let's stick him out there and see if he can help us unglue the spacing on the floor here. I want to see how the Cavs handle. I know we dismissively referred to the Kia Center a little bit earlier. Full disclosure, I didn't know it was called the Kia Center, so maybe that's to Chris's point earlier. But that is a starved fan base. Like, you want to get to the psyche of the Orlando crowd, that's the only show in town. This is their thing. So
other than Disney.
They're gonna be juiced. So, yeah, in terms of sports. They're gonna be juiced, and the Magic are gonna, you know, when a team's down 2-0, there's this air of desperation to them. Like, I don't know, the Cavs will try. I don't know that it's really possible for them to match the urgency that Orlando is going to be feeling at the beginning of this game, just because, you know, if you go down 3-0, it just kind of feels like it's over, even if you extend it to 5. So I expect the Magic, at least in game 3, to put up a very, very good fight.
Yeah, what about you, Ethan?
I'm going to stick with 6 because I'm usually the dramatic one on these shows, so I'm going to tune it down just a little bit. I'm going to stick with 6 for now, but I think I'm with Jimmy. If they get to 3 wins in a row, I might be changing my prediction.
So there's another variable here going into game 3 that I think we need to touch on. The health of Jalen Suggs. Playing through a strained knee on adrenaline.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some other stuff.
You know, he's a football player. That's his background. That's one thing. But that thing is going to be painful tomorrow. And he's going to have to get around-the-clock treatment to be ready and effective for Game 3. It's one thing to be healthy enough to play. You feel like you're healthy enough to play. But if you're not as effective as you need to be, running around the screens, playing the level of physical defense, picking up full court, having your legs underneath you for open threes. If Suggs doesn't play or he's limited, the Orlando Magic do not have a playable point guard. Think about that. I mean, they went to Markelle Fultz for 6 minutes and he got torched. That was food for the Cavs on offense. They just attacked him relentlessly. Caris LeVert went at him everybody that Markel Fultz was guarding, the Cavs said, we're going to get the ball in that dude's hands, and we're going to play him right off the court because he cannot hang defensively. Jamal Mosley is going to make defensive-minded decisions in this series because he's a defensive-minded coach and it's a defensive-minded team. If Suggs can't be right, they're not going to justify minutes for Fultz. He's going to get torched on defense. And Cole Anthony, unless he's making shots, he's going to get targeted on defense too. So who do they go to run the offense and get them in sets and stuff? Are they going to go to Point Franz? Are they going to go to Joe Ingles as like a super-sized point guard? Somebody who's going to have a hard time hanging on the defensive end of the floor as well? Like, that Suggs variable is really, really important to how much further this series goes.
The other thing about Suggs, he's, I mean, historically a shaky shooter, but this year he's their leader in three-point attempts per game at 5.1. He's shooting about 40%. He's not making them in this series yet, but that's another thing you got to consider, because Fultz, again, we talked about it earlier, the second Suggs came off the court in the first quarter, the Cavs' offense just immediately supercharged. But the other thing about Fultz is that when he's off the ball, just ignore him. It's one more guy. Like, the downgrade from Suggs off the ball to Fultz in terms of the amount of attention you have to pay him. I mean, I think that's a good – it just cannot be overstated how important Suggs' knee is to the future of this series.
And I think I liked how Donovan was reacting to the series. And Donovan's been talking like this since game one, since the series started. Each game is its own game. And it kind of reminded me, and I told this to Chris when we were in the media room, it kind of reminded me of when Kobe Bryant got asked, why aren't you smiling? You're not happy. You're up 2-0. What's there to be happy about? Series isn't over. So that's the mindset that Donovan Mitchell has. That's the mindset that Darius Garland had after game one when he said, one down, three to go. It's been a good mindset type series so far for this team, and I think that'll carry them to where they want to go. But until next time, we will talk to you about anything going on with the Cavs on the next Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But before then, remember to subscribe to our Subtext channel, sign up for a 14-day free trial, or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me, Chris, and Jimmy. It's not just our podcast, it's your podcast. This is the only way to have your voice heard. So subscribe to Subtext and join the community. Y'all be safe. We out.